Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. There is no military solution to the crisis in Syria. This is according to the foreign ministers of Russia, Iran, and Turkey. However, it appears that the military alliance on the ground between Iran and Russia has definitely helped bring these talks to light. But will these talks ultimately produce a lasting peace? Stay with us as we take a look at this on the debate.
The Russian capital Moscow has played host to another international meeting on the situation in Syria, which has been grappling with a devastating war since 2011. Top diplomats from the three guarantors of the peace process in Syria, namely Iran, Russia, and Turkey, held a trilateral meeting to discuss the latest developments. One thing that the three firmly agreed on was that there's no military solution to the Syrian crisis.
We have insisted from the beginning of this conflict that while fighting terrorism was a common global responsibility, there was no military solution to the crisis in Syria.
I agree with Javad Zarif that the best solution is the political solution, and any military solution is illegal and unsustainable.
The Russian foreign minister then stressed the importance of clearing the whole Syrian territory of terrorists so further stability could return to the volatile country.
I am sure that it is necessary today to help the Syrians to finish clearing the country of terrorists, and we are all helping the Syrian government to make this happen faster.
The Moscow event was the first such trilateral meeting after the U.S.-led attack on positions of the Syrian government in reaction to an alleged chemical attack. Iran's foreign minister spoke out against the raid. He said any use of chemical arms anywhere is condemned, but stressed nobody can arrogate the right to itself to act in response, particularly before any credible probe has been done.
We have always condemned the use of chemical weapons, regardless of the victims or culprits, but we do not believe that taking the law into somebody's own hands for political gains can do anything but further complicate the situation in Syria and further exacerbate tension.
The negotiations among Russia, Iran, and Turkey in the past few years have significantly turned the tide of war in Syria. In their first attempts, the three countries designated some areas as so-called de-escalation zones, lowering the level of conflicts in Syria. They also concerted their efforts on the fight against Daesh and other terrorist groups, which led to the territorial defeat of the terrorists.
And these are the three countries that should be able to work with the government of Syria to get a political solution, because they are the three countries that have a legitimate interest in Syria. Iran and Russia have been invited by the Syrian government to help stabilize it in the face of external aggression. And Turkey does have a legitimate security interest because the border with Syria has been grossly destabilized.
The efforts being made by Moscow, Ankara, and Tehran for reaching a lasting political resolution to the crisis in Syria now stand versus the recent military attacks on the Syrian government and a smear campaign against the country's legitimate president, Bashar al-Assad. The triumph of the talks over militarism could prove crucial to the end of the Syrian war, which has killed thousands of people since its onset 7 years ago.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program out of London, journalist and political analyst Hafsa Kara Mustafa, and out of Washington, D.C., Professor George Washington University, Mr. Nabil Michal. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off in Washington, D.C. And Nabil Michal, do you think that these talks with these three entities can ultimately lead to permanent peace?
We hope so. Greetings to you, to the guests, to the audience. We wish them success. But let us first raise two issues. First, why they met, and what they did not discuss. Why they met? Because the meeting comes on the wheel of the U.S. raid against Syria, so some discussion is needed. Not a full comprehensive one, but some talk is useful. They are trying to assess what the next steps for the U.S. are, and that's, of course, is an important concern. Second, I do not think that they discussed plans to pull out of Syria soon, because even a couple of months ago, I recall Putin said that he was withdrawing some troops from Syria. That is not true. Russia is still very well entrenched in Syria. I think at this moment they prefer a stable Syria, not much military action, to test the Americans to see whether Trump is genuine in his promise to pull out of Syria, to assess also the fight against ISIL and other extremist groups, to watch the Israeli front, and not the least, from a strategic perspective, to assess also or evaluate how the strategic landscape of Asia is evolving.
Okay.
Soon we'll have a meeting about Korea that is so essential it could render peace in East Asia, and that would raise the question, will West Asia, meaning Syria till Iraq all the way, passing through Arabia and the Persian Gulf and Persia, will also be witness some mood of optimism and peace? I believe next week the Prime Minister of China is meeting with the President the Prime Minister of India is meeting with the President of China. So the strategic perspective now making Asia a strategic focus.
All right, stay with me, stay with me, Nabil Mikhail. Stay with me. Let me turn to London and get her in this conversation. Ms. Hafsa Khara Mustafa, what message do you think these talks between these three parties are meant to send to the United States and its regional supporters?
Well, I think this is an important meeting because it indicates that there is a side in this entire mess that is very much invested in seeing an end to the crisis. And obviously Russia and Iran, we know for a fact that they would like to see an end to the conflict. And I think, ironically, the party that has the most interest in seeing an end to the conflict now is Turkey. Because, of course, Turkey made a very bad calculation at the very beginning of the crisis when it turned against its former ally, Syria, and engaged in this conflict supporting the rebels. However, this completely backfired on Turkey, and it has caused the Kurdish issue to resurface. It has caused a fluctuation in the borders between Syria and Turkey. And of course, Turkey is now bearing the brunt of a massive immigration problem. So it is for, ironically, Turkey that this meeting needs to be successful, because Turkey really is the country that is paying the brunt of its very, very bad politics. And I think that this meeting is important because it shows that there is a genuine drive to bring an end to this conflict. Where I lose confidence in any possible result is the fact that the other side, the Western side, however, does not want to see an end in conflict. We know for a fact that now part of America's foreign policy agenda is to start wars and actually never stop. Taking Afghanistan as an example, this is a war that started 17 years ago and is still ongoing.
Okay.
And there are still attacks on, troops are still present in Iraq. There are still attacks on Yemen. So I think the idea is that the Americans would still want to see this conflict continue.
What about that, Nabil Mikhail? Do you agree with our guests in London that actually it's the Americans who want to see a continuation of this war, and perhaps it just continually, endlessly, as we've seen, as she mentioned, Afghanistan, 17 years and counting?
I disagree with her, because no one wants war. Afghanistan is a unique case because, yes, America could not achieve victory, but also so as their enemy in Afghanistan, they could not achieve victory against the Americans either. So it's a big strategic still made, but she raised an important issue about Turkey. Yes, there is a centrality of the Turkish question in the whole Syrian tragedy. And the question is, how will the Kurds define, the Kurds in northern Syria define their status? Are they going to stick with the Americans, with the some help they received from the Americans, especially through deployed American troops in Syria? Or are they reassessing the fact that America did not help them much or adequately, whereby Turkey attacked them? So I think they may try to contact the Russians. So that could be a very interesting factor. The Kurds deciding the fate of Russia, the fate of America, and the fate of Turkey. Of course, I'm not exaggerating, that they will really have all these resources and that they are resourceful, strategically speaking. But any step from their part can put pressure on America that you did not help us enough, can invite Russia to play a bigger role, and can also cause some worries in Turkey that their presence in northern Syria would not that be easy. So if I'm describing at the beginning of my talk a little bit of a tranquil strategic landscape, it could be stirred by some reverberations coming from the Kurdish areas. But again, everything depends on what the Kurds will do, how they will define their strategic outlook, and what kind of responses will be offered.
All right, Ms. Khair Mustafa, although all agreed at this meeting that the solution will not come via military means, but by political means, do you think that the talks are helped because of the continuous Syrian military victories on the ground now against the terrorists?
Of course, I think the more we see military victory on the ground in favor of the Syrian government, the more it makes it obvious that the rebels have no future in succeeding in destroying and dividing Syria. So I think this very much helps the cause of these talks and actually indicates that this was a bad decision from day one and that the solution to this crisis would always have come from a political discussion as opposed to a military conflict that is asymmetrical from all sides and has essentially just contributed to the evisceration and destruction of Syria without, if anything, obtaining any result for any side. Because 7 years on, no one has gained anything from this, but the Syrians have lost considerable amount in terms of the infrastructure, in terms of the death toll, and of course even in terms of the brain drain that it has suffered. So I think the more victories on the Syrian side, the more it shows that the stability of Syria relies on a return to calm and of course in the hands of the Syrian government.
Well, Nabil Mikhail, are we looking at a new paradigm, one that tells Washington and others that regional countries can't come up with their own solutions to their problems without outside interference?
This is very good. I mean, a paradigm is the proper phrase. And yes, conceptually, this is also true. The relationship between great powers, superpowers, and regional powers is as complex as the fate of any strategy that needs to be establishing success and be evaluated often. So this is a nice way of putting it. But I mean, superpowers listen to that message often, that regional powers can assert the rights, and it also depends on what a regional power is. I mean, Britain could be a regional power, Germany could be a regional power. So the evaluation is extended over a long continuum of incidents and wars and peace accords and others. But let us just focus on Syria and stop theorizing. The problem with the Obama administration is that it induced a bigger role for regional powers in the Syria crisis, unlike what happened in Lebanon in 1982 and 1958, is that we tried to reduce Egypt's role in Lebanon. We tried to reduce Syria's role in Lebanon and other powers, the Israelis' role in Lebanon. Obama just embraced a strategy whereby he invited regional powers to dominate over Syria. What happened was the influx of so many armed groups and armed individuals. So even the regional powers became bogged down in a situation whereby they could not eliminate threats to their existence. So I believe that regional powers, whoever a regional power is, Iraq could be a regional power in Syria, should cooperate with America and Russia to clean up the mess that Obama caused and also seek the respect which the Syrian people deserve, that war should end, peace should come, and hopefully democracy and prosperity can follow.
Well, Ms. Khair Mustafa, do you think that we're witnessing a newfound confidence in the region in general based on the victories over the terrorists in Iraq and Syria? And if so, how does that actually reflect the new reality?
I'd love to say that I agree that I'm seeing a renewed confidence in the sovereignty of certain nations, but I'm afraid I'm struggling to see it. I mean, in Iraq, as soon as ISIS emerged, or rather re-emerged in 2014, you saw the Iraqi government actually appeal for help from Western countries and essentially America, so calling the very parties that caused the breakdown of Iraq and favored the emergence of ISIS, Daesh in the first place. So I'm not seeing this confidence. If anything, I think on a regional level, I'm unfortunately seeing that a lot of similar mistakes are made again. If we look at Libya, for instance, and I know this is not the topic, but the fact that Haftar, who collaborated with the Americans for 20 years, is now a major figure in the resolution of the Libyan crisis, shows the very few lessons have been learned. Now, of course, the emergency now is to bring an end to the bloodshed and to the killing in Syria, and I hope that is done. It will have been done, undoubtedly, with the help of Russia and Iran and Hezbollah as well in Lebanon, not to forget. And of course, and then I think the bulk of the fighting has been done by the Syrian army, of course. But I don't yet have this confidence. I think we're very far away from seeing a solution and seeing a sort of return of resurgence of sovereignty in the region at the moment.
Okay. Well, what about that, Nabi Mikhail? What do you think needs to happen that these political talks move from just talks to more action on the ground and ultimately leading to peace?
I would expect the repetition. I would not be surprised if I hear soon that another round of talks between the leaders of Iran, Turkey, and the Russian Federation have met. The question is also that there are so many developments going on. As they meet, I rule out the chance of a war between Iran and Israel over Syria. Next week, I believe the Israeli defense minister is coming to visit Washington to discuss Iran. Also, I rule out any discussion on that part. He's talking to them about Gaza. So I believe that they will continue regular meetings to make constant evaluations of the situation against the backdrop of shifting trends, strategically speaking. But I do not think that Syria will become an arena for war, and I think there could be more interest on the part of the Trump administration of the situation between Israel and the Palestinians, especially over Gaza, not Israel and Iran over Syria.
So you think, staying with you, Nabil Mikhail, so you think that Donald Trump actually wants to take American forces out of Syria, that he does not want to stay there and keep them on the ground?
This is what he hinted for. This is why also you have Nikki Haley saying we have conditions for the pullout, but I will put my money on Trump's words, not his UN ambassador.
Okay. Well, Hafsa Mustafa, what will it take, in your perspective now, to bring peace to Syria? Of course, it's a very complex situation, but do you see these trilateral talks that were taking place today in Moscow going towards that? And what else needs to happen, actually, to bring about a peace for the Syrians?
Well, I think it's very important. I obviously don't trust Trump in any way, shape, or form. He did say when he was running for elections that he wouldn't get involved in foreign wars and that he would focus on America. And he obviously hasn't stuck to his word at all. He went in this recent attack on Syria with no evidence whatsoever. I mean, the only evidence we were provided, us as the international viewership and community, we saw children being doused in water and told this is a chemical attack. So on the basis of images of children being doused in water, there was an attack on Syria. So Trump cannot be trusted. And I think the parties that are not willing to see an end to this conflict are very clear. First of all, Saudi Arabia continues to provide the rebels with arms, does not want to see a victory on the Syrian sovereign government side. We know that Trump, that the Americans, that the French, that the British, like to keep an Arab country weak so that they can regularly flex their muscle in order to act as a deflection from the domestic problems. We know in France you had strikes, 3-month-long strikes. In Britain you had the catastrophe of Brexit. In the US you have Trump facing an FBI investigation. So these distractions influence in the Arab world are necessary for domestic consumption in these Western countries, and they'd be very happy to see the situation continue to deteriorate endlessly. So the only solution would be for these countries, Saudi Arabia and of course these Western capitals, to completely withdraw from Syria and allow Syrians to finally sit back and find a solution. Because whilst one side of the argument wants to see an end of the conflict, the other, as far as I'm concerned, and I think the evidence is there to prove it, does not want to see any end of this conflict. And the proof is simple. Every time Bashar al-Assad actually gains ground, every time a terrorist organization is defeated, Western propaganda props up some story and tells us that there's a chemical weapon attack or something to justify more attack and to justify more intervention in Syria.
All right. And unfortunately, we're out of time. I appreciate both our guests. Out of London, journalist and political analyst Ms. Hafsa Qarat Mustafa, and out of Washington, D.C., Professor George Washington University, Mr. Nabil Mekhai. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashmi, signing out for myself and all the crew. See you next time. Goodbye.